This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. Boker Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, I wanted to just talk a little bit about Israel's great gymnast, Artem Dolgopyat. He is, of course, an Olympic silver medalist from 2024. He's also won the European Championships on two previous occasions, highly decorated and a specialist on the floor exercise. He had a little disappointment in the European Championship recently when he slipped and fell and he didn't get a good score, ultimately ended up in seventh place, but he really rebounded from that. And he won on Sunday the floor exercise in the Challenge Cup in Paris and came home with gold medals. So he's back. He had a little injury last year, which kept him out of action, but he's definitely back. And as we've mentioned on a few previous occasions, being an Israeli sports person and having to compete in places like Paris is not a lot of fun these days.
No. It's just watching what's going on around the world. It's actually staggering, you know, when we're reading reports of professors at universities in Italy being beaten up. It's just become an absurdity.
I agree. And I mean, that particular story that you mentioned about the professor in Italy, Howard, relates to a professor who's not Jewish, who simply expressed a contrary view to the one that was being touted in his class. And the students felt that it would be appropriate to beat him up. And, you know, what he said is absolutely right, that once upon a time, universities were a place of dialogue, a place of education, a place where different views can be expressed, can be accepted or not accepted, but minds can be opened up. And instead, what we're seeing now, particularly with the pro-Palestinian contingent, is that they feel it's necessary to resort to violence in order to express their view and in order to confront those who feel that they have the right, they have the obligation, they have the desire to support Israel, not necessarily anti-Palestinian. And I think that we need to draw that distinction, because many Israelis would say, look, first and foremost, I am pro-Israeli. Whatever Israel is doing, it is doing in the interests of defending itself. I'm also pro-Palestinian in the sense that I would very much like to see the idea of a Palestinian state set up in peace with Israel, with people who wish to promote their own well-being and who wish to continue just to develop an economy and to develop an environment that will allow their children and grandchildren to grow up, to learn, to develop, and to improve their lives, rather than to use it as a springboard to attack Israel. So I don't think that being pro-Palestinian is necessarily being anti-Israeli. The problem is that those so-called pro-Palestinians are really just anti-Israeli, and that they're using the Palestinian cause to express their anti-Semitism, their anti-Israeli point of view. And I think we're just mixing up a few things here. So I just felt the need to kind of clarify that a little bit. Right now, however, you know, as so many people have famously said in the past, either you're with us or you're against us. Mm. So unfortunately, we're in a situation right now where if you're pro-Israeli, you're effectively anti-Palestinian and the contrary view as well. But I think that in a calmer situation where things can be considered with a little bit more balance, I don't think there is any contradiction between being both pro-Israeli and pro-Palestinian.
And the problem is that we have been told that there is, and there really shouldn't be. Let's talk about Operation Gideon's Chariot. Well, the new one, what's that, number two, is underway in Gaza. What's the impact been so far?
So Israeli troops are now on the ground in Gaza. We understand that tanks also are present in Gaza. There has been a massive, massive migration of civilians away from Gaza City towards the south. And for that purpose, Israel has allowed not only the coastal road to be used under supervision, but indeed also the Salah al-Din Road, which up until recently was closed. That is the main artery route that runs from north to south in the Gaza Strip, in the central part of Gaza rather than the coastal road, which is on the western side. And so the Salah al-Din Road has also now been opened to allow people to migrate from Gaza City towards the south of Gaza. What's the issue? The issue is that massive migration, and when you see the pictures of the roads and how congested they are and how loaded up the vehicles are and how many people are riding in the vehicles and how many people are walking on the side of the road, that massive migration of people on the one hand sends a very negative picture to the world at large. It looks as if the civilians are being unjustifiably excommunicated from certain areas, and so that's got a potentially a very negative picture. On the other hand, the positive side is that if the IDF is intending to carry out a military operation in Gaza City, which it said numerous times that that is what it's planning to do, then getting civilians out of the way is the morally just thing to do. So when you see these people moving in these huge convoys and everybody going, oh, this is a war crime, it's a war crime to move civilians from a war zone to safety, then you need to also just understand that the intention is really just to get civilians out of the way. What's the challenge for the IDF? The challenge for the IDF is that the hostages may well be hidden amongst those people who are being migrated. And the idea is not to allow the hostages to be moved around. We want the hostages to come home rather than to be moved from one location to another. So I have no idea really what they've put in place, checks and balances that have been put in place to try to see whether our hostages could potentially be amongst those tens of thousands of people, maybe even hundreds of thousands of people who are moving away from Gaza City towards the south. Having said all of that, the IDF just determined that it's more important to get the civilians out of the way than anything else right now. And I'd like to just re-emphasize, because I'm sure that the regular listeners are already aware of this, that Operation Gideon's Chariots 2 is not universally supported by all Israelis. In fact, we even heard the Chief of General Staff expressing some reservations about the government decision to proceed with this operation. And the reason that the Chief of General Staff has given are really very simple ones that we can all understand. This endangers lives, not only civilians in Gaza or other people in Gaza, but potentially also IDF soldiers who are being required to go into very, very extreme circumstances and situations on foot in order to carry out this operation. It potentially endangers our hostages, who we have heard already are going to be used as human shields above ground. We don't know what kind of reaction might be happening below the ground. So all of that endangers our hostages' lives. And of course, the hostage families are very, very sensitive to that point. And another issue, which is not necessarily the concern of the IDF Chief of General Staff, but it's the general concern of the Israeli government and indeed all Israelis, is the impact on the international community. Because now there is almost a universal call across the world against the IDF carrying out the operation in Gaza City. Now, one might say, well, We heard about all eyes on Rafah and how the IDF and Israel were told in no uncertain terms that those operations shouldn't be carried out. And then when we look back on the decision to carry out those operations, there was massive justification for that having to be done. And in fact, now I think there are very few people who could honestly turn around and say that was a big mistake to carry out that operation. There will be some, but I think that there are very few people. The other thing is that it comes against the backdrop of that attack in Doha, which we are now pretty sure wasn't very successful. The attack in Doha seems to have annoyed the American administration, who seem to be the only member of the international community who's really standing up in favor of Israel right now. And most importantly, the question is, what does this do for potentially releasing our hostages? Now, the attack in Doha is being attributed to the reason why the discussions, the negotiations for a potential hostage release are completely stopped. Mm-hmm. And we do understand that Ron Derm, a member of the Israeli government, has been in the UK this week to meet with Steve Witkoff to see how we could potentially restart those discussions about hostage release. But right now, the operation in Gaza needs to be focused on releasing hostages and weakening Hamas further. Messages coming out on social media from people having to evacuate from Gaza indicates that all of that action could well be a more weakening of Hamas, because people are very annoyed. People are attributing blame to Hamas for all the hardships that they're having to endure. This, we understand, is contributing towards a certain weakening of Hamas's stronghold in Gaza. The food situation seems to be resolved in a way which Hamas now seems unable to leverage food and humanitarian aid coming into Gaza for its own purposes. So the question, the real question is, is this operation serving to weaken Hamas? Is this operation serving to give greater prospect of release of our hostages, either by force or by negotiation? Unfortunately, those answers are not available to us yet, and will only be told with the benefit of hindsight. But I certainly hope that whatever Gideon's Chariots 2 is undertaking and doing, it will achieve those two main objectives.
Mm-hmm. Let's also talk about let's talk about the Israeli laser beam system. Apparently that's operational and ready. What does this mean for Israel's defense?
So we spoke about Iron Beam for quite some time. It's now apparently been called not a laser beam, I think, but Laser Dome, I think, is what they've now renamed it in English. But what's quite interesting about the system is that it's also been given a new Hebrew name. And the new Hebrew name that it's been given is Or Eitan. Or Eitan literally means very, very strong light. Or is a light. Eitan means really strong. And so Or Eitan on the face of it means a very, very strong light. However, there is something a little bit more behind the name Or Eitan. And what lies behind Or Eitan is Captain Eitan Oster, who exactly a year ago was one of the first Israeli soldiers to be killed in a maneuver in southern Lebanon. Now, Eitan Oster was the son of Dovi Oster. And Dovi Oster is one of the system's principal designers and developers. And so it has been seen fit to call the system Or Eitan, strong light, but also Eitan's light. And I think that that's really a great tribute to an IDF soldier whose father has been very much involved in this. So we understand that Laser Dome has been in test mode in combat situations, particularly in the north of Israel, over the last few months and even potentially longer, and has now been officially declared ready for operation. Ready operation means they now need to go into production in order to produce the necessary equipment that will allow this Laser Dome system to be deployed quite much more than is currently the case around Israel. We understand that it'll be a system that will be extremely effective against drones in particular, because drones have their own set of challenges that come with them about the way that they maneuver, the way that they are navigated remotely. And so drones have really presented a major challenge. One of the major challenges, by the way, is that they can fly beneath the altitude that is effective for the use of the Iron Dome. And so now with Laser Dome coming into operation, it will be able to target drones and indeed missiles that are potentially slightly lower altitude, that have slightly different characteristics that make them difficult to shoot down by Iron Beam, by Iron Dome. So all in all, I think Laser Dome will be a great addition to Israel's defensive armory. We understand that it's due for operational use towards the end of the year once the production facilities can be achieved and the equipment can be produced. But ore a ton apparently is now ready for action.
Incredible. And finally, Israel's Ofek 19 satellite has begun sending pictures to its base in Israel. What do we know about this?
I've wanted to talk
I
about
know
the Ofek 19 satellite
we've
for
had
a
it on our
while. It was
list.
actually, we have, and I think it's a really important thing to talk about because I think the first thing that we need to say is that Ofek 19 was launched a few weeks ago from within Israel. So this is a satellite that has been entirely produced in Israel and was even launched from within Israeli territory into its orbit. And so I think it speaks to the discussion that we had yesterday about Prime Minister Netanyahu claiming that we need to become more self-sufficient, we need to be more self-reliant in the defense area. And I think that Ofek 19 is a great example of the way that that satellite technology has developed in Israel. Ofek 19 has now begun sending its first images from the satellite. None of those images are available in the public for us to see. We don't really know what they have, but from what we have gathered from the Ministry of Defense, it's all been highly successful. And all of this means that this is really visual intelligence information that will be sent back to base in Israel from the satellite. We also, this is not the first satellite in the Ofek range that Israel has launched. We've had a few failures along the way, but I think the last one was Ofek 13 from a few years ago. And we understand that that has been incredibly successful in allowing Israel to map, for example, what's going on in Iran has been very, very important for Israel's intelligence gathering capability in Iran. I have little doubt that Ofek 19 will be similar to that. I'm not sure that it'll be focused only on Iran or specifically on Iran, but I have little doubt that Iran is one of its targets amongst many others. So this is all very, very important and great news for Israel this week that the satellite pictures are finally coming back. And they are all apparently as planned.
That is where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom, a great weekend. And we'll chat to you Erev Chag on Monday morning. It's 8:01. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.